Hello and welcome to Leaning Into Light's free recorded interview for November 2018.
My name is Jessica Rios and I'm the founder of Leaning Into Light. And we offer these free monthly recordings to support our listeners to lean into light. What does that mean? Leaning into light means constantly recovering, choosing to return to joy, to pleasure, to forgiveness, to relaxation, to choose all the things that feel good in life, because life's going to throw stuff at us. And when we lean into light, we're choosing to return to feeling good. So this is one of the gifts we give, these monthly conversations that are free for you to enjoy, these interviews to support humanity to lean into light. So grab a pen and pause the recording if you need to take notes. Whatever you write, whenever you write something down, it makes it more powerful in your life. It makes it more likely that it'll happen. So welcome to this interview, listeners. I would now like to welcome our very special guest for this month. Her name is Shannon O'Loughlin. Welcome, Shannon.
Thank you for having me. I'm grateful to be here.
Yay. So a little background on you, Shannon. Shannon is a Waldorf teacher and currently serving as educational director at Blue Oak Charter School in Chico, California, in Northern California. And Shannon derives great joy from tending her flower gardens, from regular Sunday dinners with her family. She loves to travel and immerse herself in new cultures, and she loves to snuggle with her elderly pug dog and take adventures with your sweetheart. So I want to share a little bit, Shannon, about how we met and why I wanted to interview you. Well, we met in Chico, a wonderful town with deep social intimacy where lots of great people meet each other. And I have really liked and respected you all along. You've always had a beautiful light shining from your heart and soul. And I just want to share a little story of kind of what popped you, Shannon, into my mind for these interviews for listeners. So we were at a women's conference, a gathering up in the hills at a beautiful lake with all kinds of mamas, children of all ages, camping for a weekend. And I was having a good time. It was nice. It was really special. And I hadn't yet had that moment where I was, oh my gosh, where I was floored, where I was just really ablaze with, oh my gosh, you know, I'm here. Oh, you know, heart on fire. And the moment that that happened was with you, Shannon. And it was when we started talking about Waldorf education, about Rudolf Steiner, the spirit of Waldorf. And I was sharing with you some of my experiences of mothering my daughter, Helena, who was 4 at the time. And you have such a beautiful spirit about you of being deeply in love with what you do and where it comes from, the philosophy behind it. And I just keep seeing this fire lighting me up. It was just like, I'm here. I'm totally here. This was, you know, it was amazing. And so, from that moment of deep admiration and connection, I felt like I want to share more of what you are and what you do with the world. So again, Shannon, welcome.
Thank you.
Yes. And listeners, woven throughout this conversation, there will be practical tools for you and how to integrate the Waldorf spirit into your life. So we're going to go over all that. So again, get ready with a pen or just listen and take in whatever stays with you. So first, I just want to explore, Shannon, a bit for the people who don't necessarily know what Waldorf education is, but also for those of us like me who are in love with Waldorf education and always like hearing about it, no matter what. So just could you share with us, let's start with the basic history of Waldorf education.
Yeah. So Waldorf education is about ready to celebrate its 100-year anniversary, actually 2019. Will be the 100th year of an international education that originally started in Germany. And it was, and I forget the gentleman's name, but he was the owner of the Waldorf cigarette factory. And he was a student of Rudolf Steiner's philosophy of anthroposophy. And he approached Rudolf Steiner and asked him to develop a form of educating children based in the Anthroposophy and to provide to the factory workers' children, and really looking at creating an interdisciplinary education for the children. And so that's where it was originally birthed. And a lot of Waldorf education has gone into the private sector, and especially in the United States, you see it a really large movement in the charter schools, so that it's in the public sector, which is really bringing it back a lot of ways to its original intention, that it is for all people. It's not meant to be an elitist education. So that's been exciting to watch the charter movement happen and really make Waldorf education accessible to all who may feel inclined to partake in it or have their children participate.
Okay, what a fascinating history to start in a cigarette factory for the workers' children. I didn't know that, so that's really awesome. And can you share a little bit about, there's a something you've said before, hands, heart, and head, or what's, is this a part of the philosophy?
Yeah. Well, a lot of what you hear with Waldorf education is the tagline of head, heart, and hands. And really that's in relationship to educating the whole child. So in addition to Waldorf education being developmentally appropriate, it's also looking at like not just the capacity of intelligence or educating the intellect, but really what is the physical development and health of the child and the social, emotional. But really, as Waldorf teachers, when we're teaching, we teach hands, heart, and head is kind of the order and way things go. And for all of you that have young children or have had children that have moved through young childhood, you know that your child first learns through their physical being. So that's the way in which they're interacting with the world. And this, it's a sensory experience for them. What does stuff look like? What does it feel like? What does it smell like? What does it taste like? You can repeatedly tell a young child not to go close to a fireplace because it's hot. And say that over and over again, but until they have the physical experience of getting close enough to it to either feel the heat or actually touch it, there isn't really an understanding of what it means that it's so hot that they could get hurt. Mm. So that's just kind of a little glimpse of like how their experience in the physical world is informing their intellect. Mm. So that's our job as teachers of the young child, is to inform the body and teach the body and give the body the physical experiences that then provide the concept to be intellectualized.
Mm. It's really meeting the child where the child's at.
Correct.
I just, as you talk, I picture a baby and how everything goes in the mouth, because that's where they, it's where we take in the world when we're babies, it seems like, well, largely, you know. Mouth.
Yeah, like what is this? They're trying to figure it out. And then the heart piece, and sometimes people are like, well, what is that really? And you hear often about Waldorf education that it's an art-infused education. And the reality is that the arts are the education. They are a huge vehicle for the teaching of the child. But the daily recitation of poetry, of singing, weekly painting, daily drawing, all those artistic activities are informing the heart forces or the emotional life of the child and allowing them to connect to the material on a really different level than they have in the physical plane. And then everything kind of just comes into the head. It kind of just molds together. It's not to say that you don't have to teach the child intellectual concepts or academics and things like that. But when you bring it in an experience where it's first embodied in their body and then it's brought into their heart, the way in which it translates into their head and their understanding of things is drastically different.
Mm. Yeah. And it's, you know, it is a contrast, Shannon, with the popular culture in American education, at least, and I'm in Sweden right now, and it's a contrast here too, where the mainstream thought says, make sure they know how to use you know, the iPhones and the tablets and stuff, and make sure they, that, you know, I want my kid to learn, be really good at math and science, so get them going really early, when actually what I've heard in real life with real parents is, you know, parents who've had children go through Waldorf all the way up through high school have said, oh, that's hilarious. I mean, because for them, it was so easy for the most part for their children to learn the left brain subjects, the intellectual subjects, once they learned all the things that, that were more natural for them. Is that how you see it too?
Yeah, that would be my direct experience with the class of children that I carried through, as well as watching other groups go through. Mm-hmm. And there's something just really beautiful in just allowing a child to unfold a bit more organically. With what I see in a lot of mainstream education is children are pushed too early for their own developmental phase. For some children, it's just fine. And then sometimes they get labeled or they get pulled out into intervention classes or things like that, when maybe they just needed a little bit more time. And fortunately, if you're, you know, if your child has a learning disability, and they're working with teachers, there are markers to indicate that, so that they would be provided different sort of interventions and supports, where sometimes you can see that a child is just, learning a bit more slowly, but it doesn't mean that they're delayed at all. I mean, I had a child that, in third grade, he really wasn't reading more than like a pre-primer kindergarten level. And we were starting to get a little bit concerned, but he could knit and he could play flute and he could do all these things that require bilateral integration in the brain, which is a precursor to being a healthy reader. And he kind of like one morning woke up and was a reader, and he was reading the National Geographic, and it was like, it all just came together and boom, it was there. And it was amazing.
My word. I got chills all over my body when you said that. You know, sometimes chills are just in one place of your body. This is like all over. I mean, to me, that's love, because you're really allowing a human to be who they are and show up how they are and not make up that they're wrong or broken. They're just, he just was ready that one day he was ready. And oh, that's a beautiful story.
So I think one of the greatest blessings about that is that child didn't at a very young age develop an image of themselves that they weren't good enough or that they were slow. Because that can happen when children are pulled out or things are being remediated really heavily early. And so, you know, tending to a child's self-efficacy is one of the greatest things we can do with them in becoming lifelong learners. Mm-hmm. And to let them know that learning is a continuum. And where you're at is okay, and we're going to keep moving you forward.
Yeah, great. Well, and so you're starting to, you've dappled into, you know, you've kind of highlighted the value of, or the beauty of relationship, and how parents and teachers interact with children and where they are. Can you speak a little more about relationship, how Waldorf is about relationships, and then maybe touch on kind of what we're modeling in relationship, and we're going to dive more into that, but just a little bit on this part here.
Yeah, I would. It's a relationship based education, and one of the primary ways you see that in just the structure is that when a child enters the first grade, which first through eighth grade is called the grades, and that's the primary school for a Waldorf education. They are put into a class of children with a teacher, and that class stays together for all 8 years. And oftentimes, and the ideal is that a teacher carries the class for multiple years as well. And so what you see develop in the classroom relationship of teacher to child, children to one another, parents to teacher, parents to the children in the class, and then parents to one another is really dynamic, and really in a society where a lot of our life is fractured, you have a really strong sense of community. Mm-hmm. I think especially what I've heard from a lot of parents that have their children go through, is they really feel like they have other people that are invested in helping raise their child, both the class teacher and then the other parents in the community. And a lot of times, you know, relationships, all types of relationships are challenging. And so that arises as well. And you get to explore those dynamics. But the children then get to see how do conflicts get solved in relationship for the good of the whole and for growth as well as people and as a community.
Yeah. And with somebody who you're going to see next year, probably in your class, because they're probably going to be there and so are you. And you don't just get to say, well, they're gone now. You have a relationship that carries on. So can see that being really valuable.
Yeah, I think it's a dynamic thing that when a parent is involved in a Waldorf community or any long-term relationships really in their life, what they're modeling for their children. So children are beings of imitation, especially, you know, 0 to 7 and up to 9 years old. Like they're really looking at the adults in their world and how those adults are interacting with the world to teach them and to indicate to them how they should interact with their world. And so when they have experiences of adults disagreeing or having conflict and finding ways to resolve and still maintain a friendship, that's deeply impactful on how that child will approach conflict and resolution in their world as well.
Yeah, it's really valuable. And, you know, so many people have conflict avoidance families where we just don't, if it's conflict, we just won't talk about it at all. And then, of course, there's the families who are always arguing, and that's, you know, neither is healthy. But I love the knowing that in Waldorf schools, you know, children are shown how to work through conflict because it happens. Conflict is human.
It's so normal.
Yeah. So before we go more into the modeling piece, which is wonderful, we have listeners, we have three kind of major areas where we're going to talk about modeling for our children, modeling around screen device use, modeling and stewardship, and what that means, and then modeling and striving. But before we do that, Shannon, will you share a little bit about, and I just love this piece, the sacred years. What are the ages? What does it mean?
Yeah, you know, early childhood, and you hear, I don't know, about in Sweden, but in the United States, there's definitely campaigns for 0 to 5 and those sorts of timeframes. And there's really a lot to paying attention to that age child, the early childhood. And we really look at children in 7 year cycles. So like the 0 to 7, and then actually all the way up to 9 years old, there's a really significant change called the 9 year change developmentally for the child. But those are really, the child is really malleable in those years and incredibly impressionable. And much of what is going on in their life is going to inform actually who their constitution is as an older person.
Did you say, sorry, the sound was a little off, what's going on in their life around 0 to 7 and then even up to 9 is what's going to inform their constitution for the rest of their life?
I did. Yeah. You see even like the Waldorf kindergarten and even in the lower grades, a lot of rhythm and routine, healthy rhythm and routine. And that is because the rhythm and routine that is instituted in a child's day-to-day life, the in-breath and out-breath of activities. So like an in-breath activity would be sitting quietly listening to a story or painting, where an out-breath is playing a singing game or having creative play, that the balance of those two things, the contraction and expansion, actually informs their developing rhythmic system. So the pumping of their blood, the beating of their heart, their breath. So we're really looking at maximizing our use of their education actually for the development of their being. When you go into a Waldorf classroom, there's incredible beauty and care given to the environment and natural materials, silk and cotton and wood and wool. a lot of really natural textures, because what they're interacting with in their environment is feeding their developing life forces. And, you know, there's windows of time in a child's life where they have the capacity to develop certain things. And especially you look at imagination, and the young child just has this beautiful gift that I think all of us adults at different times marvel at their ability to live in the imaginative world and really be active participants in it. They're not just how we as adults can step in and play imagination. They are fully integrated into it. It is their reality when they're there. Mm-hmm. And that's a short period of time. We see between like 8 and 9, during around the 9-year change, that is something that moves away. So how are we providing opportunities both at home and at school for the child to deeply live into their imaginative life and world?
Wow. I revel in how you share it so beautifully. And yeah, it's just the spirit of Waldorf and how it really does look at the whole child. It's like there's something so satisfying to me about an educational model that actually holds a child's spirit, a child's creative self, a child's, you know, a child's whole being. It's really beautiful. And it makes me a little bit like, oh gosh, when Helena is 9, what am I going to do? Like, I'm going to need some kind of, you know, grieving ritual with my girlfriends. Really? Yeah. Right. It's like watching this transition. It's, it's so big.
Yeah. I mean, we're not going to delve into it today because it kind of could be a whole thing, but the story cycle in Waldorf education is paramount. But one of the things is that at the 9-year change, the children hear the stories of the Old Testament and Adam and Eve getting cast out of the Garden of Eden. And it mirrors for a child going through the 9-year change, being cast out of the bliss of childhood. Hmm. And it's really a profound marker for parents and for children in their lives.
Oh my word. I have chills again and I'm almost crying. Like, wait a minute, she's just 5. Let's not go there yet. Amazing. Amazing. The ritual in it. Great. So before we move on, Shannon, I just want to share with listeners who might want to jot down a website to get more information, www.waldorftoday.com. And is that just a general website with information on kind of the world of Waldorf?
Yeah, I find it to be a really user-friendly website, both for people that are new to Waldorf education and those that have a depth of knowledge and understanding. I feel like there's something there for everyone, for educators, for parents. It's really great.
Excellent.
And it's a really good book. It's a little harder to get your hands on, but it's called Education Towards Freedom.
Okay. Excellent. So
quite good.
Book called Education Towards Freedom. And the website is www.waldorftoday.com. So we are going to dive into the first kind of area we're choosing in this conversation, listeners, to focus on the modeling aspect and how parents, how Waldorf education looks at modeling for our children. And so keeping in mind that this is for you if you're a parent who is already a Waldorf parent, it's for you if you're not that, there are pieces in this for everyone. So the first area we're going to look at is modeling around screen device use. So we're talking about our cell phones, our laptops, our iPads, all that stuff. And I want to share a little piece about, my screen kind of culture life and just one little aspect, but I'm really sensitive to noticing how all of a sudden it seems like in the last 10 years, humanity in the places I've lived, so in California and in Sweden, we've basically married our screen devices. We've married these phones we keep in our pockets. We're really intimate with them. We keep them with us. It's just wild how kind of much we've dived in. And so for me, I can't do much about everyone else, but I do know that I want to have a mindful relationship with my screen device for myself and also for my daughter who's watching me. And so I'm actually off social media right now for 2 years. So listeners, if you try to look for Leaning Into Light on social media right now, you won't find it. You have to go to our website at leaningintolight.com. But I'm just taking a break so that I make sure I'm making the choices that really work for, you know, my values and impressioning on my daughter. So Shannon, excuse me, will you tell us what is the Waldorf education philosophy around our devices and screens?
Yeah. Well, I mean, 100 years ago, it was totally non-tech, and when it's been developed, and much of Waldorf education stance on non-media isn't always actually, it's not primarily about the content of the media. It's actually about the way in which the light and flashing of the screens impacts the brain. And I'm not going to go into all of those details today, but I think that's an important point because a lot of times parents are like, well, there's really good educational programs and activities and things. And so I just think it's important to note that that isn't actually what it's about primarily. But we are low tech. So if you go into a Waldorf school, you're not going to see smart boards in the classrooms. There's traditional black slate boards. And and the technology is used in the older grades as a tool. Children are living in an era where they do need to be educated on how to do research on the web. Like, what is valid research? How can you use that to educate yourself? How can you create a PowerPoint or a video to complement your eighth grade project to show your learning after you've done your mentorship and things? So we've really looked at, as our school, we're a public school. And so what's finding a balance with the technology? Because some will say that the dogma of Waldorf education around technology is not realistic in today's age. And then there's other people that are like, yeah, but we're just inundated with technology. So we're looking for a middle of the road and not to have technology be a teacher, but how can it be a tool both for students and parents in their lives?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, to see it as a tool, I imagine you're actually bringing a lot of mindfulness, you know, increased mindfulness to parents in the process, because not all families are sitting down at the table, at the dinner table, and talking about the impact of our devices in our lives. But when their kids come home and the kids have been talking about it, you know, is it kind of like they add mindfulness to the parents' lives too?
Yeah, I would think so. And anyone that's really interested on this specific thread of topic, Ben Klocek, and he's actually in the Sebastopol area, is he's doing a lot of work on technology use and kids and Waldorf education. And he came to our school this year and he spoke with our faculty and he also spoke with, he did a parent evening. And one of the things that he shared was, to create mindfulness for the parent is if they're using their device in front of their child or in the presence of their child, that they actually verbalize what they're using it for.
Yes.
So this would do two things. It would, one, like, oh, I'm on Instagram. I'm checking out from my kid right now. And you'd have to actually verbally be like, oh, I'm scrolling through Facebook. Or it might be, I'm text messaging with your mom right now because we're trying to coordinate who's going to take you to your birthday party and who's going to take your sister to her horseback riding lesson.
Yes.
You know, so that you're not just mindlessly texting, but the child knows that you're using it as a communication tool to facilitate family events and to coordinate how your family's going to function that day. Or you might pull it out and say, oh, you know what? We're going to take you to that birthday party. I'm going to pull up Google Maps and see how long it's going to take us to get there and what route we're going to use. So you're embedding mindfulness in your own practice by communicating to your child how you're using the technology as a tool. And when he shared that, I felt like it was a really big aha moment for the teachers and for the parents, for everyone there, of like, oh yeah, this doesn't limit us to feel like we have to hide and not use our phones or our computers in front of our children, but it allows us to relate to it in a better way and teach them how they can use it to be beneficial.
Absolutely. And I noticed myself as you were sharing, saying a big yes, you know, I said it out loud because
yeah,
it's such a strong passion for me, this stuff. And I instinctively at one point decided I really limit my phone use around my daughter. And when I use it, actually say it out loud what I'm doing. And I didn't hear it from anyone. It just felt like, wait a minute, if I'm going to step up to the plate and embody how I want to be, and have her see somebody who's, yeah, like you said, you know, oh, we got a message from your grandma and she's saying she's going to come on this date. It deepens intimacy with your child. It increases transparency. It does all kinds of good things. So I'm really happy to hear about that gentleman who came up with, who shared that. Can you share his name again for listeners? Ben Klocek?
Klocek, yes. Klocek is Klocek.
Okay, excellent. So good tool. All right, and I just also want to share a resource for families. There's an organization called Screenagers, and I actually was at a Waldorf school in Sonoma County in California, and the film Screenagers came to be shown, and it's a really great organization that helps families be mindful, make healthy decisions and lifestyles around using their screens. So you can check out Screenagers online. And speaking of tools, devices online. So next piece of modeling, Shannon, stewardship, you said, is a big deal for the Waldorf education model. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, one of the bases of Waldorf education is aligning activities, songs, with the natural rhythms of the earth. And so as part of that is trying to just instill in the child an intrinsic relationship with the care of the earth. And this is now more than ever a really prevalent need. And how do we bring that into a child's awareness without it being overwhelmingly sad, but just the ways in which they can take care of the earth. So in the kindergarten, when they're, you know, chopping soup and making their soup once a week, all the vegetable scraps that they don't use, they get put into the Mother Earth bucket, and that's the compost bucket. And we have parents that collect those and take those to their chickens, and then maybe the eggs will get brought back in to be made into a birthday cake for a birthday celebration, and really trying to teach the children about the interconnectedness of the natural world and why it is our responsibility to care for that. You also see in the third grade curriculum, practical living and application. So really trying to empower the child that has gone through the 9-year change with that the earth is their home and that it will provide food and water and shelter and enjoyment. And in return, that we care for it. And so we work in the garden and we tend to the seeds and we take care of the animals. We feed them and we brush them and we milk them. And so there's this reciprocal relationship between the natural world and the thriving and surviving of the human being. And the more we are engaged in taking care of it in a good way, the more both everything benefits from that. So I think that is just a big overarching umbrella is the stewardship of the earth. But then are we we're stewards of our classroom, that we every day at the end of the day, there's daily jobs where we all pitch in and we sweep and we clean the desks and we put everything back into its place and we get it set for our next day. And stewardship of our peers and one another. So when someone's crayon pouch falls and 5 children run to help put it back together, the care that they're showing for one another, and doing that without being prompted, but it's an internal desire or drive to take care of their friends and their classmates and their peers. And then finally, really, to take care of oneself. So really teaching that to the child at a young age, that when they're having big emotions or frustrations coming up, most of our classrooms have some sort of a healing station or a space that they can go where there might be rose water or some crayons or just a place to relax. And in a way, self-care is a stewardship of oneself. And when we're at a place of where we are taking care and nourishing ourselves, we are of greater benefit to the whole. And so there's a lot of layers to it, I feel like.
There are. And at the essence, Shannon, of what I, from what I observe through what you're saying, it's about relationship. It's about a caring relationship with oneself, with the classroom, with each other, with the earth. You bring it all the way out from the self, and it's beautiful. It's relationship is what life is all about. So I love hearing about that, and I love imagining the world that gets created through a child who has been trained to prioritize care in relationships. Mm-hmm. Very beautiful.
Yeah, and not just with other things that can talk, right? But with with the plants, with inanimate objects, that there's care in your interactions with those things as well.
Yes. So the last area we're going to dive into as far as modeling is, you shared a word called striving, or a concept called striving. So would you be willing to share what this means and some examples of how it looks in day-to-day life?
Yeah. Well, I'm not a parent, but I've observed a lot of parents in my life, and I have a lot of close friends that are parents, and I think that they are the epitome of people that are striving in this life. And then I have been a Waldorf teacher, and I interact with them on a daily basis, and we too are striving. And so when I think of that word, it's not a word of perfection. It's not even a word of capability. It's actually a way in which someone is choosing to engage with a desire to grow, a desire to learn more, a desire to be better at something. So from my direct experience as a Waldorf teacher, I taught second through eighth grade consecutively. So every year you're teaching a new subject matter. And it varies drastically. I mean, when you go from teaching second grade, where you're teaching fundamentals of writing and, you know, carrying and borrowing and multiplication, fast forward, you know, 5 or 6 years, and you're teaching physics, expository research composition, and algebra and geometry, the task of a human being to grow in that way, you have to constantly be striving and desiring to learn more and grow. And that has a really strong influence on a child. And, Carol Dweck's growth mindset TED Talks are really great on this. When a human being has in their mind that they have the ability to grow, their ability is far more significant than when they have a self-image that they're bad at something and they're just going to stay bad at it. And so as adults in the lives of the children, how are we showing them that, like, oh, you know what, maybe I'm not such a great cook, but I'm going to get this recipe that's like yummy meals and, or this book that's, you know, yummy meals in 30 minutes, and I'm going to try one a week. And your child is watching you directly learn how to become a better cook, and they're getting to experience yummy food, and they're getting to see the pride that you have in that. And maybe you develop a new hobby and a new joy and a new way of nourishing yourself and your family in the process. And that's really impactful on a young person.
Yeah, you're actually,
I think even as a, as an adult, sorry, when I see that happening with other people, it's impactful to me and inspiring to me.
Yeah, you're raising the level of rigor. Not rigor, you're raising the bar for how we show up. And when you're talking to your child about the child's not willing to try a new food, you can actually say, well, remember when mama didn't know how to cook and I decided to try to make something? I know you can do it too. You know, and you're saying it to your child from in the bones. You're not saying, hey, guess what, kid? It would be great if you could strive for something better, but I'm not really doing it. There's really a mismatch in that.
Yeah. And, you know, children are so perceptible, and so much of the unspoken world they understand, probably in a lot of ways that we can't. And they might not be able to articulate, well, why are you asking me to push myself when you don't push yourself? But they know it. Inside there is an internal mechanism where they know those things. And so, I really think about it, around math. And when math can become difficult, a lot of people have a story about not being good at math. And you'll hear parents say to their child, like, oh yeah, I was never good at math either. Like, math was always hard for me. And it's almost like a resolve that, like, you're just going to be bad at math. So that's okay. And when you can change that mindset and be like, you know what, that was hard for me, and I worked really diligently, and I went and saw a tutor, and I learned my multiplication tables, and that made it easier. That sort of story changes a child's relationship to their learning and thus their success.
Mm. Absolutely. Gorgeous example. I love it. And Shannon, could you just repeat for listeners the TED Talk resource you gave?
Oh yeah. Carol Dweck on growth mindset.
Carol Dweck on growth mindset. Excellent. All right. So we've got some listeners who are going to be Waldorf parents. We've got some listeners who are, you know, their babies in the womb, or their babies just popped out and they might consider Waldorf. You've got lots of others. For those mothers or fathers whose children are not in Waldorf education, and they resonate with it, though. It's just not where their kid is, but they do really resonate with it. How would you suggest that they integrate Waldorf, the spirit of Waldorf, into their lives?
Yeah, great. I think one of the first ways that I would say is really around the time that they provide for their child. So, one of the things is our children these days can tend to be overscheduled, with activities and play dates and things. And I really encourage parents to see, what it would be like for their family to free up some of that time and spending a lot of that time outside, and in nature. And if you don't have access to nature easily, that's okay also. Like, just being outdoors, a child automatically has a sensory experience of the changing of the seasons just from the way that the air feels on their cheeks and on their nose and on their eyes and what the different smells are. And I think I'd really, a thing that I like to talk to parents about a lot is that, it's not their job to keep their child entertained. And what arises from boredom in a young child, or, you know, I mean, in any age, is pretty magnificent. And so if you can wean yourself into a relationship where it's not your job to feel like your child is entertained. So if your child is bored, you don't have to give them a whole bunch of options of what they can go do, or you don't have to say yes that they can be on the computer because they're bored, but just allow them to be bored and see what they come up with. See what sort of activities they create, what new friends they make. They might start, depending on their age, they might start writing their own books, or they might go build a fort outside. And I think it actually just would give parents permission to step away a little bit and not feel like that's their responsibility.
No. So humans, young children are born so beautifully curious. We're all a masterpiece. And so they, you know, we have our own, when we're children, we have our own inner guidance system that leads us to find what next there is to do. You're right. We don't need to be entertained. And I love that that's something you talk to parents about. I love that.
Yeah, just allow their creativity to arise. You know, we had a couple years ago at a festival, we were trying to think of all these different activities and booths to have to quote unquote entertain the children. And I said, why don't we just have a whole bunch of cardboard boxes and duct tape and just, and we did. And that center had children all the way through adults in there creating structures and costumes, and the play that came from cardboard boxes and duct tapes was far more imaginative and interactive and crossed generations than a lot of different structured activities. And so, giving yourselves a little bit more freedom and a little more looseness in what is available. Yeah. And I think another piece of Waldorf education that I really love that resonates with me, that each family could choose how to incorporate in their own way are ways of reverence. And so that might be before you eat a meal, that, you know, you thank the earth for growing the food and maybe the animal for its life and the sun for the warmth and the rain for nourishing the plants. We, you know, before using our flutes, we always thank the tree that gave the wood that made that flute. Before we use our beeswax crayons and paper, we're thanking the bees and the trees for those products. And just bringing a sense of honor and gratefulness that that something has given of itself to provide for us. That's an awareness piece also, but it's part of stewardship, but it's just that reverence of care for things, and that a piece of paper isn't really disposable because that came from a tree. And so to honor our use of that. Mm. And then another thing that's really sweet to do is to create a nature table somewhere in the house. It could be on a windowsill. You could actually have a little table in the room or the bedroom or living room. But that it's seasonally based. And so you're really looking at just drawing your child's attention to what time of year it is and how that feels externally and internally. And maybe on your nature walks or your adventures outside, you might collect some fall leaves and some acorn caps and things like that to put on your nature table. But those are just ways of bringing some reverence into the home for everyone.
Excellent. I just want to recap those for listeners. So the time that parents provide for their child, being outdoors, it's not their job to keep their child entertained. Having ways of reverence, simple ways to express gratitude for what we have, and creating a nature table. Those are really, really beautiful, really simple, and something everyone can do. So thank you for sharing those. And I just want to share a little personal story. I want to specifically direct this at the mothers and fathers of children who are in the earlier years, or mothers and fathers who haven't yet given birth to their little one. But just in the arena of it's not their job to keep their child entertained. You know, our daughter is 5, and I'm really proud of the fact that she doesn't know the word bored. She doesn't know it. She doesn't know it. She doesn't know what it means. She just hasn't ever heard it. And she's an only child. She's a single child, whatever you want to call that. And she just kind of goes about her day and does her things, and we don't entertain her. I never say, you know, you could do this or you could do this. I just haven't done it. It's not wrong or bad. I just haven't done it. And I just love the fact that she's never really turned to me and seemed like there was nothing in her mind that she wanted. She has this beautiful desire inside of her to sing, to create, to build with blocks, to look at animals, to make, you know, farting jokes. Whatever it is, there's always life in her. And I think that it's something that we just step back, get out of the way and let that life stay strong instead of the entertaining. So I just want to give a little cheerleading, you know, rah-rah to those parents who have little ones to really remember that we definitely don't, as Shannon, as you said, need to keep our children entertained. So thanks again for that. And Shannon, before we close, I just want to ask you, because you're such a beautiful embodiment. You're so articulate and all that, but you're just the light of Waldorf just really shines through you. And I'm deeply grateful for that. And I just want to know, you know, what is it that you love most about your work?
Ah, that's huge. Yeah. I think it's the relationships. It is definitely the relationship and the personal journey that the relationships take you on if you're really willing to delve into that. I have one child in fourth grade that could get me really like no other. I mean, maybe like my sister could get under my skin. And I remember going to my mentor after school, and she's so wise and wonderful. And she said, "What is it about that child that you don't like in yourself?" And that was really a profound moment. And in the coming weeks, doing a lot of reflecting and paying attention, and that child always had to be right, and they always had to have the last word. And there was one other person in the room that was like that, and that was me. And those were undesirable qualities in me. And so that was something I had to work on and resolve in myself that then taught this child that aspect of themselves. And, you know, that child is off in college, incredibly successful. And we have this really wonderful, healthy relationship now. And that's just like one small story of like, I mean, that's just from my class. And now that I'm working with the whole school, the number of people that I interact with, that teach me about life and about myself, and that hopefully there's some reciprocity in that I'm teaching them as well, is really beautiful and profound. So I think the relationship piece, it's just woven into so many aspects of it as well that,
it comes across very clearly, very strong. And it's again, where you're embodying the spirit of striving of, I'm going to step up. I'm going to look at myself. I'm not going to blame this child anymore. I'm going to look at, you know, what's here with me. And then you've got forgiveness and all kinds of beauty in that story. So thank you so much.
A lot of humility. Very humbling.
Yeah. And frankly, Shannon, with pretty much every Waldorf teacher I've spoken with, maybe there've been about 30 or 40, maybe that's it. But with every one of them, there's a spirit of deep, deep passion, almost like, I don't have the words here, but it's like the way that Waldorf teachers feel about the Waldorf way is like praise. It's like, it is so beautiful to them, and it is so something that they want to step up to and become more of whatever they can be for the sake of their work. And it's like, oh yeah, if I send my daughter to school, that's the one I want her to go to. You know, that's what I love about Waldorf education. So I do want to take a moment, if there are any other Waldorf teachers listening, to thank you for your incredible devotion to the human spirit, the human journey through being a Waldorf teacher. And to Shannon, thank you so much for your devotion to this work and for being with us on this conversation today.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me to share and feeling inspired. And I hope that the mamas and papas that are listening to this feel really excited to just really honor the person that has come into their life as their child and to celebrate who that little person is and to go forth in that spirit.
Beautiful. Yeah. And especially listeners, if you've stayed with us this long, I know that this recording has had some real ups and downs and Leaning Into Light is a huge labor of love. It's more like an art of love. So there's no money involved in this for me. I do this all from my heart. And so this is the recording. It's not going to get, you know, much better than this for this recording, but it has had some special challenges. So if you've been listening this whole time, you definitely have a passion that is noble in this world for your children, for children as a whole. And I thank you for that passion, and thank you for staying with us on this. And thanks to the original spirit of, you know, Rudolf Steiner and what he brought to the world with Waldorf education, honoring the whole child, imagination, spirit, curiosity, may we all be held in that spirit, children, and then the child within us, grown-ups. So if you found this useful, show some love today with somebody else by sharing it with them. Someone who may be sitting at a desk or commuting long hours and could use an uplift who comes to mind for you. And thanks again for being with us and choosing in whatever way you do today to lean into light. You can find all our monthly interviews on our website. We're up to about maybe 9 or 10 now. I've been doing these every month. It is an absolute joy to provide these conversations to you. I trust you're getting something lovely out of them. And you can find them all on our website at leaningintolight.com. Click on conversations. So thanks again for being with us and have a beautiful day.